You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's Wednesday, December 1st, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, we are on the verge of a lockout here as the collective bargaining agreement is, set to expire, and players and ownership are not, according to reports, not even close to any sort of an agreement to keep things from avoiding a lockout. We're headed towards that. Some reports say by tomorrow. There continues to be a little bit of movement in terms of players signing contracts. Yesterday, we saw former Cleveland catcher Roberto Perez sign a one-year deal with the Pittsburgh Pirates. We can talk about that here, but just the threat of a lockout. We're at this situation again, where the players and the owners can't come to an agreement to keep things open and running. And it's the first step towards a possible delay to the start of the season.
Yeah, Joe, the last time there was a lockout was 1990. And I was sitting in my hotel room in Tucson, Arizona during spring training, writing about minor leaguers. And so, you know, that's a long time ago. You know, there's been almost a quarter century of labor peace between the players and the owners, you know, after they, you know, took the game to the brink in 1995, 1994, I should say, when they canceled the World Series. This is precedent setting, but it's certainly, you know, it certainly gets your attention. And, the one good thing I can say is that if there is a lockout, they've got all winter to negotiate and get a deal done before spring training, before the season opens, and hopefully the season isn't damaged.
And we got a whiff of this, a hint of this, a couple of back during the height of the pandemic when baseball basically was shuttered, and then to get things back going and to get to an abbreviated season in 2020. We basically had to go through negotiations similar to this, you know, not like the whole collective bargaining agreement was on the table, but it was the two sides needing to come together. And, you know, the fans and the media basically watching the two of them interact going, okay, guys, get your acts together and get something on the field here. It seems like we're headed towards that same sort of helpless feeling that gripped us from the early days of the pandemic back when we were all on lockdown. This is, to use a millennial word, is kind of triggering for some of us to be sitting here experiencing this and the feeling of, hey, you know, baseball might be shut down for a little while.
Yeah, and the good thing is, I think in the pandemic when they were trying to set the rules for the season before the 2020 season, you know, they were just slinging mud at each other, and it was like open and public and nasty, and you just got frustrated with it. You know, it was killing the game. I think each side did themselves no favors. At least this time around, at least until now, the negotiations have been pretty, you know, under wraps. You know, no one has taken a shot at the other guy. So, let's see what happens here. And maybe they'll be able to work something out. And Joe, if the system is broken, then why have teams spent like almost $2 billion over the last 4 or 5 days on free agents? I mean, that's a heck of a system.
Right. We've seen a lot of spending basically up until this deadline. They moved the non-tender deadline up to yesterday. We saw Cleveland tender contracts to all 7 of the arbitration eligible players, as well as everybody else on the 40-man roster. So there won't be any sort of, disputes there. We'll eventually they'll get to that process of exchanging numbers with the arbitration players. But that might all be in a compressed window sometime later on in spring training, if we ever get to that point. You and I were talking earlier about how, this is actually kind of nice to get some activity and some movement on the free agent side of things. Whereas normally in a year, this free agent process drags on throughout the whole month of December and into January. And it's more like a slow drip instead of a fire hose. This has been drinking from the fire hose, in terms of free agency with the news and the signings. Now, none of that's been related to the Guardians at all, but that's for other reasons besides, the availability of these players.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just amazing the amount of money that has been spent in such a short time. Just a year ago after the pandemic, every team was saying how much money they had lost, how much, it's going to take a while to recoup. And, you wondered, where did this money come from? Were the owners crying wolf, or were they, I'm sure, teams, small market teams that didn't have their attendance in 2020 were hurting. And even in 2021 with, the reduced crowds because COVID was still in place, they're still rebounding from that. But obviously, a lot of teams, if you're Texas and you can spend $500 million on three or four players, so that money's got to come from somewhere. So, it's really, I could see why the players might be a little skeptical when the owners cry, poor.
Come on, Hoynesy. Everybody knows the pandemic didn't happen in Texas, and they can spend whatever they want. I kind of tend to agree with you there, but yeah, that's the owners are notorious for never wanting to open up the books or show their hand in terms of what they've got. We know it's got to be far more than what they're crying poor. I tended to believe Chris Antonetti when he said that, the financial outlook was pretty dire for Cleveland, but
yeah,
that's for other reasons. I mean, you look around and you just see that there's nobody at the ballpark for half the season. There's validity to that statement. But as we mentioned earlier, Roberto Perez, he's going to get $5 million from the Pittsburgh Pirates. After 8 seasons with Cleveland, what do you take away from Roberto Perez's time with the ball club?
I love Perez, really like Roberto. I thought he was just a good, solid defensive catcher, kind of got his chance to play every day late. He was playing behind Yan Gomes. He was playing behind a couple guys and really didn't get an opportunity until they traded Gomes. He has the good year in 2019 and then can't stay healthy. And really, really felt bad for him that, he couldn't stay on the field. He wins 2 gold gloves. He throws great. Offense certainly, he was short. His offensive game was short. But if you're a catcher and you're a gold glove catcher and you can hit 20 home runs a season like he did in 2019, you're golden. You're set. And now he's going to Pittsburgh. Hopefully he's healthy. But I feel bad he's going from the kind of the frying pan into the fire. The Indians, have been a contender, and now you're going to a team that's rebuilding, and it's going to take them a while. But the big thing is, it looks like he's going to be starting, Joe, right? Because they traded Stallings the day before.
Right. Yeah. They traded away their starter, a coveted catcher, in Jacob Stallings. The one thing I'll say about Roberto, he was always very good with the media. He was always very, you know, willing to answer any questions and talk with us at length about the pitching staff, and always handled the pitching staff really well. He did, after that 2019 season, you know, he didn't sit back and rest on it. He knew he had to get stronger and get healthier. He dropped weight. He hired a personal trainer in the offseason before the 2021 season, came into camp looking, you know, really fit. And it didn't help. He breaks his finger on a freak cross up with James Karinchak on a curveball in Chicago. And then that sort of sends the whole, you know, the dice tumbling on another injury plagued season for him. So maybe in Pittsburgh, he can prove that he can stay healthy. And, you know, I maybe he doesn't stay in Pittsburgh for the whole season. Maybe the Pirates with a 1-year contract there flip him to a contender by the end of the season that's looking for somebody to, you know, calm down a pitching staff, a veteran guy. Maybe he gets a chance like that to chase after a ring there after, you know, remember he hit 2 home runs in a game in a World Series game in Cleveland in 2016. So there's still that he can still do those.
Yeah, that, you know, that was probably the highlight of his career when, you know, he stepped in for Gomes and, you know, really handled that staff great to Game 7 of the World Series. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah. That...
Another former Indian that signed, Joe, was Cesar Hernandez, signed a 1-year deal with Washington for $4 million.
Well, and then he's back in the National League East. He's very familiar with that that division and those teams. And have fun playing out in the National League East. All right, great. All right, let's dive into our player of the day on the 40-man roster. It's a guy that, you know, might be a surprise to be on the 40-man roster as a pitcher, as a relief pitcher. It's Anthony Gose, 31 years old, and he completely reworked his career and made it back to the big leagues. Probably one of the stories of the year for Cleveland last year was that the Gose was able to come up, made 6 appearances at the end of the season, worked his way all the way up to the majors. And when he got here, he was pretty good in a small sample size.
Yeah, definitely, Joe. Really, really an interesting guy. You know, the Indians have had him in the system for a couple of years now, you know, as he tried to make that transformation from the outfielder to a pitcher. He always had the great arm. He has a great arm, obviously. And the question was control. Can he throw enough strikes? And he certainly did that this past season. What, in the 6 appearances with Cleveland, you know, 1.35 ERA, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks. He gives up 2 hits in 6 2/3 innings. Joe, he faced right-handers hit 118 against him. Left-handers didn't get a hit. The lefties went 0-5 against him. So, I mean, this guy's dealing, and obviously that's a small sample size, you know, 6 2/3 innings. But at Triple-A, he goes 6-1, 3.55, you know, 49 Ks, 28 walks. He's averaging 13.4 strikeouts per 9 innings. You know, the walks were high, you know, which has, you know, been his kind of problem. But, you know, I think he, you know, and, you know, he seems to enjoy it, Joe. He seems to, like, squeeze everything he can out of his career. I mean, he goes to the Olympics this mm-hmm. past winter. He's pitching winter ball now. So he's trying to get better, man.
Yeah, I was shocked that I saw some video of him pitching winter ball as recently as this earlier last month. I get the sense that he just wants to be in the dugout, on the field. He just wants to be out there. It doesn't matter if it's Triple-A, they said, you know, you're going to be in the minors most of the season. He says, okay, give me the ball. Let's go. You know, he's got probably the best attitude and approach to the game of baseball that I've seen out of a big leaguer in all my time covering pro sports. This is a guy who, from everybody you talk to, says he's the best teammate they've ever had. Who was it that mentioned was it Trevor Stephan? Somebody mentioned that, you know, just being with him in AAA and then being with him at the major league level, he's a guy that you talk to and you just find time to hang around with him and pick his brain because of the experience that he has.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who last played in the big leagues as a position player in 2016. So, and then 5 years later, mm-hmm. you know, he makes it back as a pitcher. So, I mean, that takes some, you know, you got to have your mind right to make that transition, to stick with it and keep grinding like that. I mean, that's a long time. I mean, and this guy, you know, had played with Detroit and Toronto as an outfielder. Then, you know, I've heard that he said, I just didn't hit enough to, stay in the big leagues. Or at least in his terms. And so he made the transition.
It seems like, though, in the second half of the season, while he was in AAA, sort of whatever light bulb needed to go off on the mound really did. He didn't allow a run after August 15th at the AAA level he pitched 13 innings, 3 hits, only 6 walks. So it sort of went hand in hand. He didn't give up any runs, and the walks were reduced dramatically. I think that's the number that jumped out in his major league outings. The 6 outings was that he only had the 2 walks. Over the course of the season, he had 28 with AAA, and that seemed a little high. But like we said there, late in August, it looked like the light bulb sort of went off. Is that something that he's going to be able to, you know, by going to winter ball, maintain that feel as they get back to spring training? And where does he position himself in terms of the way this bullpen sets up for next year?
Yeah, I think that's why obviously he went to winter ball. You know, this is a guy that knows he's behind, you know, he's got a late start on this thing, and he's got to keep working at it. He's 31. He's got to, you know, keep, you know, kind of just honing his craft and trying to, you know, make the transition and trying to just get, you know, get better. I remember talking to Ruben Niebla at the end of the season when the Indians ended the season in Texas, and he was talking about Ghost, and you know, he had him a couple years ago in Double A, and Ghost was only throwing at 87 to 88 miles an hour. And you know, they had brought Ghost in with the reputation, you know, this guy throws 100. And Niebla said, hey, you know, he had a heart to heart with Ghost and told him, hey, you know, I've got 13, 14, 15 left-handers that can do what you're doing. You know, I want to see the velocity that we heard that you have. And Ghost said, well, you know, in the last organization I was with, I mean, Texas, when he tried to make the transition, he said they wanted me to throw strikes and concentrate on throwing strikes. And the Abel goes, let it go. We'll get you to throw strikes. You let the ball go. And, you know, that helped him turn it around.
That was sort of the moment that he unleashed the beast. And we saw, you know, he was hitting triple digits on the radar gun when he came up. That gives Terry Francona, if he wants to use Ghost, you know, in towards the back end of the bullpen, that gives him hard throwers from both sides of the plate or from both sides of the mound, and leading up to, you know, 100 miles an hour in Emmanuel Clase. Can you just picture a bullpen with these big arms now that you've got? I mean, Karinchak can get it up in the high 90s. Trevor Stephan can throw, you know, mid 90s plus. I'm sure I'm missing some of these guys.
I mean, you know, Henkes,
right? Maybe,
he can throw. He throws hard. You know, so you've got like 4 or 5 guys at the back end of that you know that could really help you if they can all, you know, if they all fall into the certain slots.
Right. What does a good 2022 season look like for Anthony Ghost? Obviously, making the club out of spring training would be the first goal on his sort of checklist. He's on the 40-man roster, so that makes it a little easier there. But if he doesn't make it and has to start at AAA, you know, how many appearances can we reasonably expect out of him if he's on the same trajectory that he was when he finished the season?
Wow, that's a great question. And you know, we just you know, I'm not looking at his minor league you know, how many, I wonder what he topped out at in the minors. You know, what he made in Columbus, what he pitched 33 innings in Columbus. Another, you know, geez, he threw what? 33 in Columbus, six, that's 40, close to 40. Then, you know, like another five in the Olympics, 45. I don't know. You know, I would think, you know, he's probably a guy that if he makes the club 50 to 60 innings, you know, in those situations, and, you know, then get him, you know, maybe, you know, he seems to be a one inning guy. Don't you think, Joe? I don't know if he goes more than one, but
yeah, probably not. As far as look at Trevor Stephan and, you know, the way they sort of treated him last year as a rookie and sort of finding his way there. He appeared in 43 games, but he did pitch 63 innings. They sort of saw him more as a multi-inning guy. I would say probably the same number of appearances between that 40 to 50 sort of appearances. If Ghost is able to last the entire season at the major league level, if he's deemed effective, just watching that strikeout to walk ratio and the number of walks is what's going to be really telling. If he's putting extra guys on base, that's going to be an issue. It looks like he's able to sort of, you know, control the team's batting average just with his overwhelming fastball. But he's going to get hit at some point. He only throws two pitches. He's going to get hit at some point. How he deals with that, and how he comes back, and how he bounces back after they do hit the ball off of him, that's what's going to be telling as far as Anthony goes.
Yeah, fastball, slider, you know, fastball averages right around 99 miles an hour. The slider's at 84. Yeah, and those are the two pitches he's going to have to, you know, he kind of puts him in a tight box. But, you know, if he can control those two pitches and, you know, not walk people, he's going to be successful. Then, Joe, the thing is, he's out of options too. So, right. You know, so the Indians are going to have to, Guardians are going to have a decision to make, you know, at the end of spring training or somewhere along the line here, you know, while they're dealing with the roster spots.
At some point, the novelty is going to wear off of, oh, there's the guy that, you know, used to be an outfielder and now he's a pitcher. When he first made his major league debut, you could see the guys in the other dugout sort of come up to the top step and peek over the railing because they wanted to get a look at this guy. You know, the guy that used to be an outfielder who's throwing 100 miles an hour now as a reliever, that novelty is going to wear off probably right after Miguel Cabrera hits a home run off of him. You know, it's going to, and that's when he becomes Anthony Ghost, the relief pitcher who has to deal with all the same things mentally that sort of these guys do. All right, Hoynesy, we're going to wrap up today's show heading into towards the end of this week, as we head towards a lockout, we'll see what the future holds for Major League Baseball here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right, Joe.